All right, good afternoon. The title of this presentation is Client-Directed Educational Material Needs Across the Lifespan for Individuals Living with Sickle Cell Disease and Parents of Children with Sickle Cell Disease. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Drs. Virginia Brown and Joseph Telfair. And also, I would like to note that I will be using the term clients to be synonymous with patients throughout the course of the presentation. I have no relationships to this close. Here's an overview of the presentation. We'll cover some brief things about sickle cell and look at more closely at the study in question. So sickle cell disease is the most common genetic disorder in the U.S., affecting approximately 89,000 individuals, and essentially it impedes circulatory blood flow due to sickling of the blood cells, or the C formation of the blood cells, and it impacts health by leading to severe pain episodes, increased risk of fatigue, leg ulcers, acute chest syndrome, among other health issues. Currently, we've seen in the literature that increased life expectancy of people with sickle cell is reflected, so people are living longer due to improved care, but we also see that the research is focused on the pediatric and transitioning population rather than the adults living with sickle cell. For the research that does focus on adults living with sickle cell, it's most often on the satisfaction of specialized care, and it is not necessarily address non-pediatric specialized care, which is not widely available. So most people aren't able to access specialized care if they have sickle cell disease, and this is not addressed. Also, it should be noted that individuals often use emergency departments, and self-care techniques in emergency departments is where they may be encountering nurses and other providers that they're not typically seeing, and the needs are larger than just treating the symptoms, and we'll go into some of those in the findings. In terms of the background, we see that research shows that emotional and informational support overall, along with positive social interactions and tangible support, are all correlated with quality of care and very important. But we also see that psychological and emotional health are largely unaddressed in the literature, particularly for adults, and partner-informed approaches are lacking in serving adults with sickle cell disease. Also, the availability and utilization of educational materials are largely have not been evaluated. So we know that people are using various informational sources, but we just don't know to what extent and how they're being utilized and whether they're helpful. And so this is where why the purpose for our study was found. So overall, there's a lack of comprehensive overview of the needs across the lifespan of persons with sickle cell in terms of information. So this is part of the Sickle Cell Disease Treatment Demonstration Project. The purpose of this project was to build on existing evidence and examine client-utilized and client-directed educational material needs for persons with SCD across the lifespan, and was extracted from a larger effort funded by HRSA and the project's National Coordinating Center. So RTI approved the study. Recruitment took place through summer of 2010 in five community-based SCD centers in the states listed, and also utilized purpose of sampling, so it was not random, and it was from the population of interest, so the results are not necessarily meant to be generalized to everyone. So focus groups were conducted with adults living with sickle cell disease and with parents of children with sickle cell disease. So whenever I discuss findings with children, really I'm talking about information that was obtained from parents. The focus groups were recorded, transcribed, and our analysis included reading and rereading the transcripts to identify themes as a collective research group. We did some of that work individually as well, and they were under the predetermined categories of questions, which included consumer information seeking behavior, informational support and resources, and unmet needs and gaps in the current resources. So who was in the study? There were 29 participants, 23 adults living with sickle cell disease, 6 were parents of children with SCD. 27 identified as African American and 17 were female, and they mostly utilized hospital-based clinics or private practice doctors to give you some context of the kind of care that they're talking about. So overall, we wanted to know what are the materials that the adults and parents are using. So the adults were using the internet, overall, since they were all of our participants were adults, they were using the internet and books and medical care providers, as well as family members as sources of information. But the most significant thing was that there was not a single source of information that they could identify. And so it was important that we were asking these questions about where they were getting their information from and what more could be changed to better serve their needs. So in terms of the children, their parents reported that they utilized specialized care most often, and so they oftentimes even use their sickle cell disease-specific providers even for non-SCD issues. And so we can see the one person here is quoted saying, "We call our sickle cell doctor for, well, I call them for everything. Like, even if it's not related, I just call her all the time, because when I call our primary doctor, they don't know," meaning they don't know how to treat that client because there may be some medications that they're already taking to treat their SCD symptoms and how those would interact. And we'll see more of that later on in the findings as well. There's also this theme of the necessity to diversify the educational materials that already existed. So even, so this participant says, with SCD, it affects pretty much everybody that has blood. But the marketing they put out tends to have African Americans, so widen the range. And if you know about the history of sickle cell disease, the diversity was not necessarily, has not been well represented, and so that was reflected in the responses from the parents. In terms of information delivery, oftentimes parents express feeling overwhelmed that when their child was diagnosed, they were given lots of information at once, and they didn't necessarily know what to do with that information all at once, and it felt overwhelming. So they even said, "We suggest that our providers disseminate that information over time." And this one participant offers two sets of sentiments. So the first is, "Whoa, she's 5 weeks old. Like, I'm not ready for that," meaning I'm not ready for all that information at once. And then also refers to the necessity for that information to be more diverse, because they did not see their child represented in the information that they did receive. In terms of adults, they noted a lot of personal relationships. So one individual calls sickle cell disease an emotional disease, and they wanted to see resources for their intimate partners. And this is not surprising, considering that our previous research has focused largely on the pediatric and transitioning populations, and into adulthood, individuals tended to form their own intimate partnerships, and they wanted to see those partnerships addressed in their resources as well. So this one person says, "I'm depressed because I've been sick for the last month. I've been in the hospital for a month and a half." He's not sure whether it's normal or if, you know, something's wrong. And so oftentimes, adults living with sickle cell disease were sort of, for lack of a better term, they were sick of explaining how they felt and why they felt that way. And so they felt like they needed literature to help their partners better understand this process of living with the disease, and to not constantly have to address those questions themselves, because it felt tiring, and also it's not necessarily something that was just going to go away over time. Also, there were lots of issues around family planning. Overall, adults felt that they were not supported by providers in terms of their informational needs. So this first person talks about trying to use birth control methods and not really getting enough feedback from their provider. And so they ended up having a trial and error with their birth control. And they said, "I had to trial and error of of which birth control method worked for me, because the pills, most gynecologists or OBs or whatever, don't really know. And so even when they ask their providers, what should I be doing, how will this birth control interact with anything else that I'm doing to care for my sickle cell disease, they did not really receive any helpful or accurate information. And then during pregnancy, another person expressed that they were unaware of how the medication they were taking to treat their SCD symptoms would impact their pregnancy and their unborn child. And they expressed this in this quote, which says, all the doctors just kept on saying, oh, it should be okay. That's because it's not your child. That's not their kid. They don't really care. They really felt that the lack of knowledge by their providers really meant that their providers didn't care about them, because if they did, they would try to figure out better dosing instructions and overall give them more feedback. We also saw issues of institutional discrimination. So the first was from employers. Many adults experienced being fired due to absences, medical absences, which were excused or should have been. So this person says, you get out of the hospital and you don't have a job. They didn't call you, they didn't say anything. They let you go for non-compliance of the absentee rule. And while some adults had positive experiences overall, others did not. And so it was important to figure out what some future recommendations may be to address these issues. We also saw institutional discrimination within the educational institutions. And so this person expresses having an excused absence, which in fact was not excused later on. So even with the doctor's notes from my provider and the hospital, they said that they did not care. It didn't matter if it was excused or not, they failed me. So the following year, I couldn't get financial aid because I had apps. So from the provider perspective, sometimes providers may feel that it's enough. Well, we did our job, we treated you, and we also gave you a note, and that should be good enough, whereas on the institutional side, that was not received in the same way, and it resulted in this person not being able to attend school anymore. So overall, as I mentioned, there is a lack of a central place to find information and answers about sickle cell-related health issues, particularly when clients were dealing with providers that they were not used to and providers that were not specialists in sickle cell disease. Overall, they report having negative experiences with providers who didn't know how to treat them. And sickle cell disease specialists favor sickle cell disease specialists because of this. However, there were several issues related to this. So oftentimes, if clients are using SCD-specific providers, they may be overburdening them. So if that's that one provider within the region, then everyone might be seeing them. But then on the other side of it, that provider may not be able to actually address their health issues adequately if it's related to something that they're not trained in. Also, informational needs exist for intimate partners, as I mentioned, and support persons of those living with sickle cell disease. And these persons often do see providers as well when they accompany their partners to appointments and things like that. And so that could be a source of where that information could be accessed. In terms of our recommendations, overall improving training with medical providers about sickle cell disease and interaction with other health issues and how to best treat patients and their symptoms is part of our recommendation. And also, I should mention that out of this study came a different subset of findings that were presented at APHA last year having to do with how clients were treated in emergency departments, and oftentimes they did not have positive experiences and were perceived to only be there to get drugs and were addicted to them, and that's essentially why they were there, not necessarily to treat their symptoms. So I feel like that should be mentioned in here when we're talking about training with providers. And overall, we need to revisit the current educational materials because of what does exist. We're finding that clients are saying, well, this is not good enough. It needs to be more diverse. And overall, it's incomplete for our needs as adults. Within children, we didn't necessarily see a gap of information for information that doesn't exist, but just that information could be disseminated throughout the life course of the child. while they're under their parents' care. So in terms of the adults, we see a large need for institutional employer awareness and for maybe a creation or adoption of supportive institutional policies to protect individuals so that they don't lose their jobs or their scholarships or financial aid while they're absent for their SCD treatment. And developing materials, we need to develop materials that address emotional and psychosocial needs of those living with SCD, and so that would be inclusive of intimate partner and support partner information as well. I'm sorry, support person information as well. And focusing on information and education about family planning and treatment during pregnancy is crucial also because of the part where I mentioned this individual was already pregnant and really receiving no guidance from their provider, and they really felt that their provider did not care about them. There are several limitations to the study. The focus group facilitators and note takers were not involved in the transcription and analysis processes, and each focus group was conducted by a different facilitator. And of course, this is a qualitative study, and again, we did not use a random sample, so it's only contextualizing it to the group of people that I described. Lots of research that talks about how SCD was as previously been essentially it created as a was stigmatized, but also largely noted as quote unquote a black disease or African American disease. Historically, but that's not necessarily the case. And actually, individuals have been underdiagnosed because their providers don't think to numerous screenings, different things. But if people, especially immigrants, have not been screened. And they live in a country, they're oftentimes misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all because they're not the people who have people.
But they would be white people, they would be people descended from a tropical area that had malaria.
No, so there would be had specific white participants, self-identified white participants who indicated, and if you note, there's one quote that says, there's nothing about white kids in it. That was a quote from one of the participants, and also white people can be immigrants as well.
I'm wondering maybe it's public health sort of educational thing. If this is going to be educational, you might instead say, well, it's very uncommon for white people. I mean, that might be more of I don't know if people really want to like put out this information. It's not really.
We have. I mean, we have white people in Southern Indiana that have.
Right.
I did the lunch training for Indiana, and I get white babies that have sickle cell trait, alpha-thalassemia trait, all these different abnormal traits that happen. And I think her point is we just need to not look at it as just an African-American black disease. It's more common there. Yes.
So you have some statistics or
something? Maybe, I'd say maybe it's very low in the white population, you know. Papers that I've looked at have, listed like, say, 1 in 365 African Americans, maybe 16,000 Hispanics, and then maybe 100,000 white people. So it's very rare, but people just need to know that it can happen to anybody, and it just shouldn't be just focused in, one area. It can happen to anybody, even though it's more common in people with Mediterranean sea ancestry. But what I always use is, who's your grandmother to like 100 power?
But I think one thing that's also important is it's not necessarily, yes, maybe it's not that common within the white population, but overall, of the people that have sickle cell, it is it's fairly diverse. So it may be more predominant in African Americans, it is a fairly diverse group, and that's
not being recognized by the provider.
How did the two that did not classify themselves as African Americans classify themselves? I'll tell a story from just about 25 years ago when the Air Force first started doing sickle cell tests on every pilot because it was a discriminatory test. And I had a gentleman who came up. His name was Mr. White, ironically. He was a major in the Air Force. He flew heavies. And I said, well, bring him on in and I'll consult with him and we'll talk to him because I'm going to have to ground him until we can do some further testing. And so he comes in. I've got the test result. I'm looking at him like, okay, must be a mistake. Let's walk down to the lab together and repeat it because there will be labs I don't expect. And we tested together and waited for the test result to come back. And sure enough, Major White had a positive sickle cell test. We went back and I said, well, just out of curiosity, where are you from? Trying to determine his genealogy. Turns out he was a little Georgia boy. And I said, well, how long have you been here? Well, my family's been here for centuries. And in fact, I have a distant cousin who still owns a plantation family to live on. Went back and we could actually found the records where the gene came from and entered his genealogy. He had two daughters and tested his daughters, and neither one of them had the gene.
There's a question back
there. Yeah, now, in regards to the having issues with school and also with jobs, did they know anything about the Disabilities Act?
Yeah, so this was noted from also my colleague Virginia Brad is here, so feel free to chime in. But a lot of people noted that, but oftentimes I feel, especially with the employment, it had more to do with the institutional policy of their particular employer. And so the employer, of course, might say, well, we're firing you for a specific reason. They would say, well, you didn't provide this documentation or that documentation. So, but ultimately they knew that it had to do with the fact that they were being missing work for treatment. But yeah, and some did. And some would say they had supportive employers because they would follow policies under the ADA. So.
Any other questions? Let's give the presenters again. Have a good evening.